The title of the lesson is Seeking Meaning in a World Filled with Emptiness. Sounds challenging, doesn't it? But it's what we all do. Try to find meaning in this life. What is it all about? What's the point of everything in a world that just seems so hollow and empty? In Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 1, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all the labor in which he toils under the sun? As this writer looks at life, he sees everything is empty. Vanity, it's empty, it's useless, it's futile, it's meaningless. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. It's important for us, all of us this morning, to examine the question that the writer asks. What profit has a man from all the labor in which he toils under the sun? What are we working for here? What are we trying to achieve? What is the point of it all? What do we get out of life more than life itself, more than just existing and the living of it? Is there something more than that to take away from life? That's the question that he's asking. It's an age-old question. It's a question that is taken up in this book of Ecclesiastes about 3,000 years ago. But I'm sure people were asking it a long time before the writer of this book asked it. It's important for us to know, or at least have some idea, about who it is that's asking this question. That is, who is the author of the book of Ecclesiastes? Because his ability to answer is in part hinged upon his ability to experience and see all that is in this world. He's asking, what point is there to all of life? And he must have a pretty good view of all of life if he's going to answer that question for us by divine inspiration. He identifies himself in verse 1 as the son of David. He also says that he was king over Israel and he was in Jerusalem. So the most natural interpretation of those two facts would say that Solomon would be the author. You add to that, that as you go through the book of Ecclesiastes, whoever the author is, he has fantastic wisdom and unbelievable amount of wealth. He mentions it numerous times. He's also an amazing architect and landscaper, and he talks about that as well. So it seems obvious to many, at least, that Solomon should be credited with the writing of this book. There are problems with that are sometimes brought up. Just because he said he's the son of David, that doesn't mean he's Solomon. David had a lot of sons. And besides that, the word son in the Old Testament often refers to a descendant and not an immediate child or son. You add to that the fact that Solomon, at the end of his life, didn't seem to be doing very well spiritually. If you read 1 Kings chapter 11, he married a lot of women who were foreign and had foreign gods, and their religions had turned Solomon himself away from the Lord. So you wonder how a person like that could write a book like this. So there are some scholars that say, well, this isn't actually Solomon. It's someone who maybe is like Solomon later on. Or maybe it's an idealized Solomon. This is Solomon as he should have been, who's writing this book. I don't much like either one of those solutions. And so my belief would be that this is in fact Solomon writing this book. I can't necessarily explain all of the problems and questions that could come up from looking at 1 Kings 11 or something, but I believe it is Solomon. But even if it's an idealized Solomon, that is, this is how Solomon, if he turned out like he should have, this is what he would have written. In either case, what you're looking at is a person who had the greatest amount of wisdom of any man of his age, near or greater wealth than anybody, access to all forms of pleasure and entertainment, access to everything that his age had to offer, knowledge and wisdom. It was all his. And so here's a person, if you wanted to have somebody to look at every aspect of existence in life under the sun, this would be the guy. This is not somebody you can turn to and say, well, Solomon, you never tried this, or you never had this experience, or you never thought about that. No, he's wise enough. He thought about it. And if he wanted to have the experience, he had it because he could. He tells us that. He didn't withhold from his heart any pleasure in this grand experiment, using his God-given wisdom to try to find the answer to the question. What's the meaning of life? What's the point of it all? The search for meaning. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? The search for meaning is limited by and large in the book of Ecclesiastes to looking at life under the sun. There are things that happen above and beyond the sun. There are things that happen in the spiritual realm that aren't considered a lot in the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, it is only in those things that Solomon's going to find the answer to his question. But by and large, he's trying to look at things that people look at every day. Living a physical life in a physical world. Where's the point of that? Where's the profit in that? The writer determines to examine life's experiences to find out, he says, by wisdom, all that is done under heaven. So he's using wisdom which God had endowed him with. Many of life's experiences are examined in detail. At every turn, the conclusion is that all is vanity and grasping for the wind, and there is no profit under the sun. You ever tried to catch the wind? We had some pretty strong wind the other night. Blew a tree over in town, right? If you'd gone outside during that storm and you got some of that in your hand, you took it inside, look, I got the wind. No, you can't catch it. You can't catch the wind. It's a futility. It's an impossibility. It's emptiness. He says all is vanity. There's no profit. There's nothing under the sun that makes this worthwhile, that makes it meaningful. There's nothing under the sun that we can take away from life that would give us more than we put into it. That's more than just existing. That's what he's saying. And he says it over and over and over again. He'll admit that while some things under the sun are better than others, the conclusion of the whole matter, though, is that you have to look beyond what's under the sun. The conclusion of everything, when he gets to the entire end of the book, of course, is this: fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. What it's all about, what the meaning of life is to fear God and obey him. And in that, we find meaning. Not because the ramifications of that and the meaning of that will be shown us under the sun, but it will be shown us after this life is over. And that's what he goes on to say in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, where in the last verse of the book, God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. The meaning to life is this: we are all going to stand before the judgment seat of God. We're all going to meet our Maker one day. And the meaning of life is this: prepare yourself to do so. Fear God and keep his commandments, so that when you stand before him, you may stand before him with joy, looking forward to an eternity in his presence. But the writer of the book doesn't get us to that point until the end of the book. And as you read through the book of Ecclesiastes and you go through everything, all of the machinations and everything else that he goes through to try to look under the sun, to try to find something, you're left at times, as he is left at times, in despair. even things that seem to be relatively good and worthwhile, in the grand scheme of life under the sun itself, become fairly meaningless. Do we want what's better, or do we want what is best? That's the question. I might just back up a second and note with you a number of words that I've bolded in the scriptures that are here. I'm going to tell you a little bit about some of these words. The word wisdom, of course, is the ability to use knowledge. It's skill. The word wisdom occurs 28 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. The word or question, what profit, is asked 4 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. And the phrase under the sun occurs 29 times. He wants us to know that he's looking for profit under the sun. The word vanity occurs 33 times. And the phrase grasping for the wind occurs 9 times. Vanity is, again, that which is entirely empty. The word better occurs 23 times in 21 verses. And I just want you to step back with me and think about that for a second. We're going to explore that in this next slide. If everything is grasping for the wind, if there's no profit under the sun, if it's all vanity, then what difference does it make if one thing is better than another? Or how in the world could one thing be better than another if nothing means anything? A lot of people have stopped right there in answering that question and said, well, nothing means nothing. I'm just going to do whatever I want. There is no better. That brings me then to this slide. Under the sun, some things are better. And he sees it over and over again. If you look at Ecclesiastes chapter 7, he says in verse 1, a good name is better than precious ointment. The day of death, better than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting. Sorrow is better than laughter, verse 3 of chapter 7. Verse 5, it is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. Verse 8, the end of a thing is better than its beginning. You'll understand that when we get to the end of the sermon today. Lots of things are better than other things. We can see that. We can understand that. But we don't really understand how that can be if nothing means anything. Some lives that are lived are better than other lives. I don't mean from the standpoint of this person's superior to that person, or I mean from the standpoint of there are better experiences, better accomplishments in some lives than in other lives. And again, he's all over that. He says in chapter 3 and verse 12, I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives. That just under the sun, he can see that there is good to be done. And that's better than not doing good. And he says in chapter 3 and verse 22, I perceive that nothing is better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his heritage. So you work hard and you accomplish something good and you're happy about that and you rejoice and celebrate that. That is good. It's better. It's better than the alternative. That leads us to the question, how can it be better? And should we settle for better? I believe there are a lot of people in this world who settle for better. Who say, okay, I can see that, Solomon. I can see that, yeah, you know, accomplishing things in life, doing good, celebrating that, that's some better stuff right there. That's what I'm going to do with my life. And Solomon says, sure enough, that's better. But when you get to the end of a life like that, what does it mean? In and of itself, it doesn't mean anything. He says it's vanity. I mentioned this fellow to you before in a sermon, I think a couple of years ago. man by the name of Viktor Frankl. Frankl was an Austrian Jew who would become, in his later life, a famous neurologist and psychiatrist. But during World War II, he was interred in Auschwitz concentration camp, where he contracted typhoid fever, had his life's work taken away from him. But he survived to actually publish that work. And it became known, its title in English, Man's Search for Meaning. Man's Search for Meaning. You say, well, I've never heard of that. Well, that's okay. 12 million people bought it, so somebody's heard of it. It's a pretty good selling book in the area of philosophy and psychology. Man's Search for Meaning. What Frankl concluded is pretty interesting. You know, a lot of people went into the concentration camps who believed in God and they came out atheists. Other people went into the concentration camps who really didn't believe in God and they found their faith in the concentration camps. Frankl really didn't either one of those. What he did is he tried to find meaning in the concentration camp. And he came out of it with the idea that there were some things in the concentration camp that you could do that were better than others. Better, that's the word. And that existence meant to do the better thing. We call that existentialism. He is one of the fathers of modern existentialism. Just existing, but existing in the best way you can, is all the meaning that there is. Now, probably that sounds pretty deep and philosophical to us, but that's what Frankl decided. And as I said, became world famous for it. Let me read to you a couple quotes from his book. Ultimately, man should not ask for what the meaning of life is, but rather must recognize that it is he who is asked. In a word, each man is questioned by life, and he can only answer to life by answering for his own life. To life, he can only respond by being responsible. Elsewhere, he says, life ultimately means, that's our question, isn't it? He's trying to answer it. Life ultimately means taking the responsibility to find the right answer to its problems and to fulfill the task which it constantly sets for each individual. What Frankl is saying is, you need to be responsible to do all the good you can do. That's life's meaning. Well, a lot of people have latched on to that. A lot of people live by that. We're just going to try to choose all the better things that we can choose and do all the good that we can do and be responsible people to our societies, to our spouses, to our children, to the generation to come. And there are a ton of folks in this world, and that's what life means to them. And when they get to the end of life, it's still vanity and grasping for the wind. Better is not the best we can do. We have a choice between endless futility and eternal profit. Go with me back now to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. The question was asked in verse 3, what's the profit? What's the profit in man's labor under the sun? Read with me in Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 4 now. One generation passes away, and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises, the sun goes down, hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south, turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continuously and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers came, there they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who come after. What profit has a man for all his labors? There is a weary consistency to life under the sun. There's a lot of motion, but there's no real progress. Nothing man sees or hears satisfies him. You check your phone, right? What's on my Facebook feed? What's the news? Did I get a text? Did I miss a phone call? You look at it, you get all that information. 10 minutes later, you check it again. We just keep on searching. Experience after experience after experience. And even when we're satisfied with one, we'll go back to that. We'll do something else. And there's no satisfaction to our insatiable curiosity or desire to experience. There's nothing new, though, under the sun. And there is no remembrance of the former things. That's odd, isn't it? There's nothing really new, but we never really learn our lesson. Isn't that humanity? There's nothing really new, but we never learn our lesson from history. We even forget what happened. Some things are better than others, and we argue about what's better. But what's the difference if the greatest pop artist of all time was Bing Crosby or Judy Garland or Ed Sheeran or Lady Gaga? And you're going to say, well, that makes a big difference to me. Well, so what? Does it matter who's better? Ultimately not. And whoever is better, they'll be forgotten. There's no more remembrance. Issues and arguments that men have settled for all time. I mean, they fought battles, they fought wars, they lost their lives, they waged arguments, they wrote books thicker than the Bible to answer questions that were to be answered for all time, and a generation later the same question comes up again, as if it had never even been broached. That's what Solomon saw. Young people forget or do not care to learn the lessons of previous generations. That was true of my generation when we were young. It's true of this generation now and will be true of generations to come. That's the way life is. That's life under the sun. Look, sin is ever seemingly evolving, but it's always the same. You know what happens in Genesis chapter 9? Years ago, a man got drunk and did something stupid. His name was Noah. We got young people coming up, you know, think, wow, I need to try that drinking stuff. Nothing new under the sun. Get drunk and do something stupid. Nothing new under the sun. You know what happens in Genesis 19? God destroys a bunch of people for same-sex relationships. You think there was gender confusion in Sodom and Gomorrah? There's nothing new under the sun. What we've forgotten, we have to learn those lessons over and over and over again. Until the day when the things of this world are no more, that's the time we'll finally learn. The Bible says, in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 16. All that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away. This world, the world that Solomon looked at, the world that he had all of those experiences in, the world that we are experiencing right now, this physical world is all passing away with the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. And there is meaning in living forever. There's meaning in that, eternal meaning. The meaning of it all comes clear when your immortal soul stands at last in the presence of an eternal God. And if we haven't got that right, we have missed it all. Because Solomon said, "Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all." If we miss that, we've missed the point of living. What profit is it? That's the same question. Same question Solomon had. Jesus said, "What profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul?" He's missed it. What will a man give in exchange for his soul? There's nothing in this world that's worth it. There's nothing. What are you doing with your life this morning? How are you finding meaning in it? Are you respecting God and doing what he said so that you can be ready to meet him one day? Might be talking to somebody this morning that's not doing that. Please, please think about what your life is about. We're going to sing a song to encourage you. There's a great day coming. We hope you're ready for it. Make yourself ready for it. Please come while we stand and while we sing.